In today's digital age, technology is woven into nearly every aspect of our lives. But for those with disabilities, this ever-evolving landscape can present unique challenges. Yet, it also brims with untapped potential. In this episode, I sit with founder of Tech Era, Derek Omari, a renowned social entrepreneur who leverages technology, education, and accessibility to create positive impact for persons with disabilities. Enjoy today's episode. Okay, so hello everyone and welcome to the Tech Stuff Podcast, where we navigate today's tech wave one electrifying conversation at a time. I am your host, Raymond Cluche, and today I have a friend, a very, very good friend from back in the days, you know, when I was younger. Now we are grown men, unfortunately. I have today with me a friend, a brother, Derek Omari, to talk to us about a very rare intersection, you know, of tech. You know, people seldom talk about this intersection because from where we come from, and for those who are listening, we come from Ghana. This is a very rare topic, but Derek, you know, just found an opportunity, like drilled down, and now he's made that into more of a career or more of a personal project he has taken up upon himself. So Derek, thank you so much for joining the TechSelf podcast. So I'll first like you to introduce yourself, then we can proceed with today's conversation.
Hi Raymond, it's such an honor to be on your podcast. It's been a long time. My name is Derek. For those who are hearing me for the first time, I'm based in Ghana. I'm Ghanaian, and I think I've done quite a few things. Sometimes it's hard to describe myself, but I'm usually found doing a lot of work around disability technology, but I also run a few startups in logistics, and also do a few things with banks and technology for clients, schools, and also consulting. And so I'm a consultant, and I run I'm on a number of projects, providing consultancy to organizations in Ghana, outside Ghana, development organizations, and on different topics. So it's such a pleasure to be here, Raymond.
Well, the pleasure is actually mine, because you know your credentials are, you know, way up there, and but then you still have a very humble demeanor. Like, I'm always, you know, taken aback by how much you do, and you know how well you're doing each of them, and that is amazing. Let's just go straight into the conversation. So you said you are at the intersection of tech, disability, accessibility whatsoever. Let's drill down a bit into tech. Like, what does your tech journey look like? How did you get started in tech?
I have a quite interesting journey. I never used technology till I was in my junior high school. That is about maybe 13, 14 years. And I remember the first time I got close to it. It wasn't something that I grew up, I even saw around me when I was growing up. You know, I grew up in a quite peri-urban community where a lot of the attention was on play, and you meet your friends outside, you play football, you know, and then other things. So when my parents were moved, sacked, let me use that word, from where they were living because they couldn't pay rent, my mom literally had to go and beg a friend and his parents, and this friend was a classmate, so that I could live with them. And I had 1 year more to finish my junior high school, and I think, which is like maybe level 9 or so. So I had 1 more year to finish that, and I needed to finish that. So I asked my mom that maybe just go and talk to a friend, and then they will allow me to live with them for 1 year and then complete it. Then I go back to them, because where they were living was very far away from where I was schooling. It was like 4 hours drive away. So the best thing was to live closer to the school, and the school was cheap. It was only 10 cedis, and I think 10 cedis is like a dollar or even less. That was at that time, per 10. Yeah. So it was quite affordable for my family. My dad being a trotro driver, trotro is like a bus driver in Ghana, the local bus driver. and my mom was a petty trader, so that's what they could afford. I couldn't imagine myself trying to get into a new school knowing my parents' financial state at that time. So going into that house is what exposed me to technology. The first time I used a laptop, I remember my foster dad gave me a newspaper to type everything I see on the newspaper. So that was the kind of training that I went through. But it was pretty late in my life. I didn't even realize that I was that late in my life. But that was the introduction to technology. And I mean, I've evolved, or let me say that the journey evolved when I went into university. I went into university as a timid guy. I was very privileged to get into Ashesi University. And Ashesi University, for those who are Ghanaian or those who follow higher education in Africa, would note that it's a very, very reputable institution. In Ghana, you would find that those who go there are mostly from good homes, though they provide very huge amount of scholarships to needy students like myself. So when I got in there, I think I was very timid and not confident because I didn't think that I had the skills to excel. You know, my first class was a programming class. This is someone, after using technology in GHS, goes to high school, never really uses the technology, because in high school, ICT is only taught like once, and you get to go to the lab like once in a term. And then you get into university and everything is on the computer. You know, and I remember when I was about to go, a friend gave me a free laptop to use when I go to university. And it was for the first time, everything was new. I was so confused. And I thought that I don't think I can ever do computer science. It is too difficult. I'll never do it. And that is how I ended up doing business, because I was too afraid.
Wow. That is very interesting. So you went into business, but one thing I know about, for those who are listening, Ashesi University is one of the top universities in Ghana at the moment. And I like their liberal arts system where, you know, you get the chance to touch on a lot of things. So I know you were doing business, you know, like you're saying, you were doing business administration. During that period, did you have the chance, you know, do something with tech, maybe a class, or, you know, join the tech club or something of a sort?
I mean, Ashesi University, like you mentioned, is a liberal art education. It forces you to learn different things. You cannot run away from it. I mean, we all did Visual Basic, you know, intro to programming, things, courses like that, and you have to do it. I mean, I did well. I think I got an A or a B. I didn't do very bad, but I really struggled, you know. And the other thing about Ashesi is that every assignment was not delivered via, like, hard paper. You don't write anything. You have to type everything. That was my first time using things like PowerPoint, using things like Excel, you know, having to navigate the internet, how to do research. It was such a new world for me. And I think my first year was one of the challenging years that I went through. But it was necessary because I needed to be uncomfortable to grow. And once I completed my first year, it was such a smooth ride. But I have to emphasize that I really struggled in the first year.
That's all right. So first time I heard about, you know, you. So for those who do not really know, another part of me is I do music, all right? And we just happen to be in the same group. Shout out to Kwaku Kwame. And I just knew you to be, you know, a musician, a keyboardist. I never even bought that. I've never even asked you what you do whatsoever. Then the next thing I hear is I see that you are being awarded some form of, like you have been awarded at Ashesi for something you had done. I don't know whether it was, you know, a project or whatsoever. I didn't understand. Like, I know Derek is in Ashesi University, but he's been awarded for what? Then I went down, like, oh wow, he started a project and blah 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 blah. Okay, this, that. Then the next thing I see, you are in the news, and then I get to know your story, your background, and I'm like, wow, I would have never ever imagined. And then until recently, you came to do your master's in the UK, and I got to know you're doing some research, or you drill down into, you know, the disability space. I'm just curious, you know, it's very rare for a Ghanaian to think down those lines. Like, what led you there? Would you say your personal challenges growing up, having to live with a different family or parents whatsoever, somewhat ignited that idea? Or you were reading a paper one day and you saw something about people who were disabled and you felt like, okay, this was like, this is my dream, like this is my passion, or this is my mission in life?
If I'm being honest, I'm actually a bit teary now.
Right.
Because like hearing you speak and reflecting on the journey, it's making me quite
it's fine.
Grateful and thankful to God. And I say this because, you know, you knew me as a musician, but at that time life was so difficult in undergrad that I didn't even have money to eat, like to spend on food. So the only thing I needed to do was to be coming home on weekends to play at programs so that I can get money for food and school. Wow. You know, my scholarship did not cover for my feeding in my first and second year, or I think third year.
Right.
So it was really difficult. And I look back and I see how far I have come, you know.
We attempted to sing Nathaniel Bassey's song for those who don't know. We are both Christian. Yes, but yeah, you continue.
You know, it's and you know, a lot of things have unfolded and how the path that I've taken and where I am today. I mean, a lot of what I do now is because of how I grew up. I grew up receiving a lot of help. The family that I told you I want to stay with did not help me because I was a relative. They just helped me because it was a good thing to do, and they saw the need and they offered to help. So when I went to Chessie, one of the things that was on my heart was to just serve people. In fact, the only reason I chose Chessie was not because of how good or beautiful the campus was. I actually never saw Chessie before I went there. Never. The only reason why I went there was because I saw a young man standing in a classroom in a rural area. And I thought that I wanted to be that person. Why? Because I just wanted to serve. So when I went to, I was just looking for opportunities to serve. And that is what led me to starting the Tech Era, which is the company that I run now. But Tech Era at that time was only an IT literacy program where we're providing IT skills to children in rural areas. And this is me after first year of struggling through computing. After the summer, I wanted to create impact and give out what I had learned. I thought that I don't want people to go through what I went through. I think people should know about this, and people can really improve their lives and their family, the lives of their families, if they had the skill. You know, they could get jobs and other things. And that's how Tech Era started. But Tech Era evolved when I went to the blind school one time to teach music. You know, I was so committed to really serving my community, and that is what I've been doing ever since. So in any opportunity, I want to just serve people. And so when Tech Era started, I was also running another project called the Brekusu Music Project, where I was using music as a tool to get children to come to school. Because then when you come to school, you participate in the music program.
Right.
You get to dance, you get to play flute, you get to drum. And we go for programs. You know, it was really exciting. So it attracted a lot of children to come to school. And then by extension, I was doing something similar in the blind school. And so one of the guys I was interacting with on WhatsApp was blind, and I didn't know. So when I met him in person, I was like, how are you able to chat with me on WhatsApp? You know, and again, an opportunity to do something. And he told me that I am able to do that because of this speech software I use. And I'm like, wow, that's very insightful. I never have ever thought about blind people using technology. And I asked him a question, so how many people can do this like you? And I think that was the redefining moment for me. And he said that, oh, just about 3% of Ghanaians who are blind can use a smartphone. And I thought, wow. So in the school that we are in, are you saying the children can't use smartphone? He said, no. And I asked him, so do they have a computer lab? He said, yes. So what happens? He said, the teacher is only one teacher to 400 children, 400 blind children. And when you are teaching a blind person to use technology, that's very hands-on. and you need to stand by the person to support them. So how would one teacher provide training to 400 blind children? It's almost impossible.
Right.
And so that's how I said, okay, at that time, you know, I started Tekera, the literacy program. Like, I think the reason why we started Tekera is for the blind community. So I mobilized students. I had about 40 volunteers who were traveling 2 hours each day to just go and support the teacher in the classroom to provide literacy skill for blind students. And that is how we started in the area of disability. So it's evolved in many ways. And I mean, today we are not just providing digital skills for persons with disabilities or only blind. I mean, now we've provided digital skills to more than 5,000 persons with disabilities.
Wow.
In different capacities. And this is not just IT literacy, but this digital skills that allows people to start businesses, that allows blind students or blind persons to design graphic design. Can you imagine a blind person doing graphic design?
No, Derek, you need to stay there a little bit. Like, no, because because that is very much like an oxymoron, you know? A blind person, like, how does that work? So maybe just, you know, shed a bit of light in, like, on that project. You know, I'm very interested in, like, hearing about how that went about.
Well, I think it's you know, when you are very passionate about something, you find ways to make things happen. You don't see the impossibility in things. And for us, that's what has driven the work we do. And that's what makes us unique. So a blind person using Canva, it's very possible. And because of how we deliver the training and the use of speech softwares and also having visually impaired trainers supporting the delivery of the content. And when we are delivering content, it's not like we are delivering the content for only blind persons. We have deaf persons in the room. We have persons with autism in the room. We have wheelchair users in the room. We have different disabilities, and we deliver the content at the go. But we have done it in a way that we are expert at it, you know, so we're able to ensure that everybody in the room is receiving an accessible content that they can easily understand and is really practical. And so that is what makes the kind of work we do surprising. Like, quite people think about it, like, how is this possible? And I mean, we've had to face parents who never thought that their children with autism, Down syndrome, cerebral palsy could develop programming skills, or could write blogs, or could put robotics together. You know, and so that's something that has been quite characteristic of what we do. We try to let people see the possibility and the skills that persons with disabilities have in them if they are on earth properly. And that's just one side of what we do. You know, we've moved beyond digital skills to creating technologies that are enabling persons with disabilities to learn, and enabling them to participate fully in the society and actively in the job market. And I'll share something interesting with you. Do you know that 90% of children with disabilities are out of school in Africa?
Oh, wow.
Yes. 9 out of 10 children with disabilities are not in school. And this is not a new statistic. I mean, in Ghana, it's a bit better. It's 88%. That's even better. But it's 88. That means almost 9 out of 10 children are out of school with disabilities. But why should a disability prevent someone from being in school? You know, and it's a big problem. And another shocking fact: do you know that if you were blind, you would have never been able to learn science and math after basic school in Ghana?
Really?
Yes, blind students don't learn science and math in Ghana in senior high school. So all blind students or all blind persons you find are doing reading courses in university, even if they are the best at building technology. You know, that is quite unfair. Why should someone's disability prevent them from pursuing careers in STEM? You know, and so some of the things that we do is to create the technologies that make these things possible. You know, we are creating technologies that are allowing children to be screened early to identify any disability occurrence and to provide guidelines to parents on how to support the children. You know, we are providing technologies that are allowing blind persons to participate by preparing for exams. You know, those days when you're in high school, you prepare for exams with past questions. But for a blind person, someone needs to read the past questions to them. And so if you don't have someone, then they can't prepare for exams. You know, so there are so many things that we've been doing. We have multiple technologies in helping them to learn maths, science, even for deaf students, not only blind, deaf students. We have technologies for children with grip challenges. We have different technologies, you know, and we also do consulting as well in the space. Program design, accessibility consulting. I'm very big on accessibility and built environment, digital accessibility. It's a conversation we can get into. But a lot has been happening over the years, and it's exciting to see how far we have come.
That's amazing. That's amazing. So I know all that sounds great. You know, someone is hearing that, okay, wow, this guy is, you know, has come, you know, maybe you are the Kwame Nkrumah we've been waiting for. You know, you've come to, you know, save, you know, Ghana, Africa as a whole. But then I know very well that if we are comparing opportunities available to people here abroad, or the resources available to people here in the West compared to what we have back at home, there's a wide gap. But then you are, you know, making do with what you have. I want you to, you know, shed a bit of light on some of the challenges you've faced so far since you started Tech Era, maybe from the heydays right up to now.
Well, it's the challenges are so many. I mean, so many challenges. I mean, every day is a challenge. Every day to even do this work is a challenge, because you keep asking yourself, why am I doing this? You know, why am I not being comfortable somewhere, having the kind of skill set you have? You know, you can be very comfortable. So every day in itself is a challenge. And the reason why I say this is, you know, Ghana is deeply rooted in the idea that disability is a curse. You know, and so people kill their children. I know parents who have killed their children with disabilities, you know, and that alone, the mindset shift, it's a huge challenge that you have to keep dealing with. You know, people don't see the possibility in the work that you do. And so if the people you want to serve don't even believe that it could be possible, that's right, a big barrier. You know, the second thing that you face is the idea that disability is charity. You know, there is what we call the charity model of disability, where people think of disability as only giving and giving and giving and giving and giving, without a clear, sustainable plan where people can be empowered to live their lives and create value for themselves. You know, and it makes the ecosystem quite difficult to navigate. Why do I say this? We as an organization have not at any point asked for donations since we started working, because we want to send, it's not that we don't need money. In fact, money is one of the biggest challenges we faced, you know, and I'll come back to that in a bit. But the only reason why we've not openly asked, we don't think donations are a sustainable way of treating or tackling this problem. You know, we think that sustainable financing, investment is one of the key ways to improve what we do. And we consider what we do not as a charity. We consider what we do as very scientific, very intentional, and very, very calculated. You know, so with this in mind, unfortunately, the investors we have are not thinking long-term impact. They are not thinking impact investing. They don't see the market for disability innovation, you know. And the unfortunate thing, again, is that the people you are serving with the technologies you are creating cannot even pay for them. You know, there is a statistic that 80% of persons with disabilities who are poor are from lower middle-income countries like Ghana. You know, so they can't even afford their meals. Why would they pay for technology? That will help them. So when you have a situation like that, there is high need but low demand, because they don't have the capacity to pay. Which investor wants to invest in something like this? That's nobody. So does that mean that you should fold your arms and stop? You know, so these are, because as a company, you have people you've employed, you pay rent,
Right.
You know, you pay electricity bill. You know, so
payroll, payroll is not fiction.
Exactly. Exactly. So how do you survive? You know.
Right.
And I think going through these things have really strengthened us in our thinking, and we've had to come up with innovative ways to survive. And that is how we decided to be more revenue or market driven, as opposed to being solely impact driven. Where in everything that we do, we think revenue, or we explore revenue opportunities. So the team is very skilled. And the good thing about disability innovation, once you innovate in an accessible way, you bring out a very unique value in anything you touch. So we're able to extend our skills to offering software consultancies to companies in the UK, companies in Ghana, banks in Ghana, schools, you know, and working on different projects that are not necessarily disability related. In fact, we have products in the area of water monitoring, water level monitoring for poly tanks. We have products for prepaid water meters that we intend to roll out very soon. You know, so we have invested our effort and time into a new sector that is not necessarily related to disability innovation, but allows us to create the avenue for revenue. And even in the areas where disability innovation is concerned, we charge to do the service. So we don't offer it for free because there are people who can pay for it. And there are people, I'm not talking about the beneficiaries, but development organizations, private companies who want to do, they can afford it. And so that's how we have had to survive. But we have really gone through a lot of difficulty with figuring out financing every month, every year. And then we have to really think, okay, how do we survive in the next month? You know, it's always a constant journey of survival. But we have come far, really come far. But these are just a few of the challenges. It's not been easy.
I can only imagine because what you are doing, like, you are quite a serial entrepreneur, and you were doing disability, but then you were thinking down, you know, ways to consult and everything. Like, I'm just like, Derek, your brain is one that we need to study, you know, we need to study your brain and the content, like how it works, you know. But I think I like the way you, like, from the beginning, you said that everything stems down from how you were served when you were a kid. Someone gave you an opportunity. So everything is, you know, coming from a place of, I need to, you know, help people. I need to help people. And that is great. And I'm sure that even segues into my next, you know, question. Let's talk a little bit about, you know, the Queen's Young Leaders Award. I know you were, you know, awarded by the late Her Majesty, the Queen Elizabeth II. And when I saw you there, I was like, wow, like, I was like, is it the same Derek that I know that was playing keys when I was trying to sing? Or I was directing, actually, I'm a music director and a singer. And it was just so nice to see how you were being revered by, you know, a very top institution. Let's talk more about, you know, that award. What led you there? What project were you working on? And how was the experience?
Well, that award, it continues to be one of the best moments in my life. For several reasons. I think, as I've mentioned, my life has been characterized by service. I stand for service. I believe that you are in the world to serve other people, and that is what matters. And in the time when I thought no one was seeing what we were doing, I mean, our work was building, let me say, credibility for itself and creating room for us, you know. That this was very early stages tech era days. We're working with the blind school, working with the deaf school, you know, working in the community music education, working in the community providing IT literacy. And then someone recommended me, sent me a recommendation notification that, hey, check this out, I've recommended you, you should apply for this opportunity. It was the Queen's Young Leaders. It was the last time, it was the last year. You know, it was organized for only 4 years. And every year they select 60 leaders from the Commonwealth, from 52 countries. Very competitive. It was the last year. I didn't think I would get in. I said, okay, if someone is saying I should apply, why not? Let me just send what I do And then I sent in my profile and the work that I did. And some way, somehow, I don't know what happened. I think that I was just favored. Yes, the work we do is important, but I think that there were people who were also doing very important work who could have actually won the award. But right. It seemed like what we had been doing was really grounded on integrity, was really grounded on just not eye service, was really helping the people, helping the students to excel, move on to the next level. And that was evident, and I believe that was one of the reasons why I was invited to the Buckingham Palace. Now, let me tell you something. What people don't know is that the package was not just meeting the Queen. The package came with a one-year free paid program. Let me say, one-year paid program at Cambridge University. Ooh. It came with several trainings from top companies like Facebook, and different huge companies in the UK. Right. We had several receptions with the Prime Minister at that time. I think the Prime Minister at that time was the lady, I've forgotten her name, the UK Prime Minister.
The Liz Truss, right?
Not Liz Truss.
Theresa May.
Yes. So we met the Prime Minister, had reception with the Prime Minister, Theresa May, and government officials, Minister of Education, many ministers. It was such a package. The last day was the crowning it off with the award from Her Majesty, the late Queen Elizabeth II,
right,
who was so welcoming, so jovial, so lovely, and so warm. I mean, you walk into a room with an orchestra playing in the background with about 60 ambassadors sitting in the room.
Right.
Top personalities and celebrities like David Beckham.
Mm.
And you have Prince Harry and Meghan sitting there. At that time, they were newlywed.
Right.
But in a beautiful, beautiful, beautiful auditorium with the Queen in front of you. You almost ran out of words. You can't believe it. I mean, I had friends who were crying. Who couldn't believe it? It's almost impossible for where we are coming from. This is someone who was playing in the gutter. Someone who was pushing ties. Someone who even didn't know that they would even get into senior high school.
Right.
What business am I doing in the Buckingham Palace? Receiving a silver medal and being named the Queen's Young Leader. Today, if you go to Cambridge University, you find our images on the walls of Cambridge University. Where did I pass? As a young man pushing the gutter, pushing ties in gutters, playing football, you know, not even knowing what my next step to next meal would be. Never thought that I would be able to be in the high school, not to even say university, to now finding myself in Buckingham Palace. What business do I have doing there? You know, and it could only be because of service, but also doing the service in a sustainable way, because in the end, you have to eat, but you also want people to have the opportunity to be where you are.
Right. That makes perfect sense. Now, from the way you're talking, I can just assume that when you wake up, your calendar is more chaotic than mine. You have so many things calling for your attention and all.
Not like yours.
No, please, because honestly, I'm every day trying to, you know, get rid of things from my calendar. But anyways, I know you recently got married, so that could possibly, you know, be a way to, you know, alleviate some of the busyness of life, or maybe not. But how do you relax? You know, I know we met on the basis of music, and I'm sure you are going to probably say, yeah, I play some keys, and he is an amazing anointed keyboard player, piano, in fact, like a minister on the keys. But yeah, more importantly, in such a busy kind of environment where you're constantly trying to keep up to date with innovation, trying to do a lot of things at the same time, like, what do you do to, you know, take a step back, relax, you know, just recalibrate, rejuvenate, and, you know, revitalize and come back into the space?
It's always a tough question for me to answer, if I'm being honest. I think that there are different seasons in life. There are times where things are quite slow and times where you have a lot of time, but they're also very busy times. I think for me, I like to drive. Driving allows me to just relax my mind, even though it can be stressful, but it's just a bit therapeutic for me. I know you were expecting me to say music, but I don't.
I've never imagined, because driving in Accra, I'm not too sure how therapeutic that is, but maybe you can debunk.
Long distances. I can drive from Accra to Tamale. That's how crazy. Yeah. I like to do long distances. So I'm always excited if I'm going to have to drive for long distances, because it's just an opportunity for me to not do anything else. You're not looking at your phone, looking at the email coming in. You're not on your laptop, you know. You're not thinking about, you're just focused on the road, focused in your mind. But I rarely do that. I don't really get a lot of time to do that. It's just the phase that I'm in. You know, I don't get a chance to rest as much as I would love to, but I think that it's just a phase that will pass. So, yeah.
That's fair. So, Ghana as a country, I don't know where we are in terms of, you know, disability and awareness, and you are in this space. What do you think we can do differently, you know, as a nation, or we can, you know, start including in our curriculum to bridge this gap and, you know, make, you know, those who have some physical, mental challenge of a sort to be still, you know, valuable assets to the nation's development? Yeah.
That's an important question that you've asked. And I'll answer you, maybe I'll just share four key points in response to this. One, I think that people need to be made aware that disability is not far away from anyone. And that anybody can be disabled at any time. And in fact, if you are very lucky enough to live long on earth, you'll be disabled. You know, and what I mean by that is, look at our elderly grandmothers, aunties, you know, who are losing their ability to walk, they're losing their sight, they're losing their ability to hear. It will happen to you if you're lucky to live long enough. You know, and sometimes there are temporal disabilities. There are disabilities, maybe you had an accident, you lost the ability to use your hand to hold the phone. You know, at that point, you become disabled. So disability is not necessarily what we always think it is. Someone in a wheelchair, someone blind, someone always sick. But anybody can be disabled at any point in time. For example, if you're in London and you're sitting in a tube with the loud noise on the tube and you really have to be in a meeting, at that point, you become disabled because you cannot hear what is going on in the meeting. But you have captioning that allows you to participate in the meeting. If there were no captioning, you are disabled. Once there is captioning, you are not disabled. Now, by saying this, I'm trying to drive to a point that people are not disabled because of their medical condition. People are disabled because of the environment that has been created. The environment is not conducive. You know, I gave you an example of how I met someone who was blind. I was chatting with the person. There was no way I would have known that this person was blind. Why? Because communication was flowing with the use of what? Technology. You know, if someone is going for an interview and the person is a wheelchair user, what does the wheelchair, there is no need for knowing that this person is a wheelchair user if the workplace has an accessible entrance. We will only see the disability of the person if the workplace does not have an accessible entrance.
Right.
You know, so it is the environment that makes people disabled. And it's an important message to put across for people to understand that we can all become disabled at any time. And that is the first step to really taking a step towards disability advocacy. And you see, like I'm saying, it's a human right. Just like how everybody has the right to education, we all have the right to worship, we all have the right to what freedom. it's someone's right. Why should someone's disability deny them of learning science and math? I can't understand.
Right. Right.
You know, so it is not being nice to somebody. You know, it is not. It is not a sympathy thing. It is just people's right that we need to accord to them.
Right.
You know, the third thing is, I think that we need to we're gonna pass the policy, what they call the inclusive education policy, that says that now you're going to close down all segregated schools and we're going to have inclusive schools.
Right.
Why? Because when you grow up with a blind person or a deaf person in your class, you don't see them to be different as a child. You grow up together. But unfortunately, the policy has not been passed, and that is a problem. And it's important that we pass this policy, because once people grow up together, stigma, discrimination, stereotyping, and all those things would be reduced, because people appreciate the abilities and not the disabilities of the people that they are in the classrooms with. And there's one last thing that I'm really excited about, and it still has to do with the educational setting, where sign language needs to be made official as a language, just like we have Cree. And should be taught and examined in school, so that everybody can learn how to sign.
Right, right.
Because if someone cannot speak, not everybody can speak like you and I. So are we saying that they cannot participate in the society? Imagine when COVID happened, everybody had covered their mouth, but there are people who depend on lip reading to communicate. You know, imagine COVID, they were blasting noise everywhere, news, TV, radio, but there were a large population of people who had no idea what was happening.
Right.
You know, their lives were at risk. In fact, persons with disability were 30% more likely to die of COVID than any other person.
Sure.
Because we had failed to think inclusively and to be accessible. You know, so it's a life and death issue. You know, disability is not something that, you know, we have played with it for so long. Nobody's interested in it. The government doesn't care about it. If you do it, you are doing it at your own expense. You know, it is time that we reconsider that. And it's really a tough industry, if I must confess. It's a tough one. I don't think we'll get there now. But just like how we have started, we think we are pioneers. We think that in a few years, the conversation will become important, like how it is important in the UK, in the US. Now there are laws. Accessibility is such a big thing in technology. We are pioneers of disability, inclusion, accessibility in Ghana. It will take time. Today, accessibility is a big thing in the US, in the UK. There are huge laws that are forcing companies to be accessible. Companies are hiring accessibility experts as part of the technical team. Teams and companies have accessibility auditors and accessibility experts who are part of product development teams. It's become so crucial, but we are not there yet in Africa, and that's what I like, because then I get to set a legacy.
That's my guy. Like, that is Derek over there. Derek thinking big, thinking wide, and not let, like, I think I have a mantra, no limits, no boundaries, but I think you are literally the no limits, no boundaries. When I say, next time when I'm saying no limits, no boundaries, I'll think Derek. We're about concluding, and I'm actually sad that we have to conclude, but then, you know, we all have, you know, other lives to attend to. I'm just curious, you know, what's the next exciting thing you want to work on? Because it seems like you are quite a serial entrepreneur, like I said earlier. You are into accessibility, consulting for banks, financial services, software development, blah, blah, blah. What is the next area you want to try? Maybe become a chef? I don't know. I don't know. I'm just curious. What is the next thing that you see yourself trying?
It's not a bad idea, you know. That could be the next thing. Well, I think I mentioned in passing that we're doing something in water.
Okay.
We want to make it possible for people to know how much water they use on a daily basis, on a weekly basis, on a monthly basis. The world, as a result of climate change, water is going to be so high in demand. You know, I tend to use the word like water is going to be like, okay, to be so pricing expensive. And so we think that there are things we can do to help people conserve water. And one of the things is from the premise that you cannot improve what you don't measure. So what we are trying to do is to give people the ability to know how much water they use on their smartphones and enable them to pay for the water before they use it, just like how they pay for electricity in Ghana. So you buy maybe 100 liters of water at maybe a £10, and then as you are using the water, you see the money reduce. And then when you exhaust it, the water cuts. You know, it allows people to conserve water in a more responsible way. It also prevents unnecessary quarrels, usually in compound houses and apartments where there are different tenants and they have to share bills. And maybe a particular tenant has about 10 people living with him or her, and then another tenant has just one person, and then they end, they have to share the same bill. You know, it's not fair. And so one of the things that we want to do is to provide our digital ultrasonic meters, water meters, and almost all apartments, schools, hotels, and allow the use of water to be in a more responsible way, you know, responsible consumption. We need to save our planet. So I guess the next thing I want to get into is really looking into climate. It's looking very promising. We are currently running pilots. We have demand on standby. We have an estate with over 700 homes that is already placed orders for the product. It's looking really exciting. We can't wait to take it across Africa.
Right. Derek, I don't think one episode is enough to have you here. So I will definitely come again. I will definitely knock at your door and say, Derek, I need you on the podcast again. But thank you so much for making time. It's been insightful. It's been enlightening. I thought I knew you from the days where we were doing music together, but talking to you has made me see you in a whole different light. And then your humble, calm demeanor, regardless of all the places you've been to, is just admirable. So I wish you all the best. You know me, I'm your biggest fan. I'm cheering you on. I can't wait to see, you know, soar higher and become, you know, the exceptional professional and also musician, because you still play. You are. And and we just, you know, excel, and no limits, no boundaries, like I said, right?
Thank you so much, my brother. It's been an honor. I find it really, really honoring to be on this platform, and thank you for inviting me. I am really grateful for the opportunity to share my story.
As we've heard today, technology has the power to break down barriers and unlock potential for everyone. But the journey for a truly inclusive digital landscape is ongoing. Thanks to people like Derek, there is hope for everyone, even persons with disabilities. Thank you for listening. See you in the next episode.